When I was asked by the centre if I could do another course this autumn, they said, we've got quite a lot on the programme about meditation this session. So, could you not do more about meditation? Could you do something else? So that meant that I couldn't do my planned course on secret highest tantra meditation for dummies after all. And so I thought I'd start really from the ground up. And so we're going to look really at the bedrock of our practice in these 4 weeks. And the bedrock of practice really is motivation. If you have strong motivation, then you may have difficulties on the path. You may go down blind alleys, you may come up against all sorts of things that you have to work with, but your motivation will be like, it'll be a motor, it'll just keep on going, it'll keep on driving you forward, and eventually you will find a way, you will find a way through. If you don't have that motivation in place, then at the first signs of difficulty on the horizon, you will think, perhaps there's something else I could be doing with my time rather than practicing the Dharma. So motivation is really kind of crucial. Back before he was elected Prime Minister, Tony Blair, remember him? At a party conference, he said, "Ask me my three main priorities for government and I tell you, education. So ask me my three main priorities for Dharma practice, and I tell you, motivation. So over these 4 weeks, we're going to be doing what we can to strengthen our motivation. And as part of that, as well as looking kind of generally at how we might do that, we're going to be looking at a set of four reflections, which are sometimes called the four things which turn the mind to the Dharma, or the four thoughts that turn the mind to the Dharma. They're sometimes called the four common preliminaries because they're common to all forms of Buddhism. You find them everywhere. And they're also sometimes called the four reminders, because they're things which we need to keep in mind. We need to keep reminding ourselves of. So in a way, these 4 evenings, they're just going to be a set of reminders. I won't guarantee, but there's a fair chance I won't say anything desperately new and original that you haven't heard before. But there might be some useful reminders. And in a way, that's what we need. I mean, we already know enough Dharma. By the time we've become a mitra and done a little bit of study, we know enough Dharma to get ourselves awakened. It's not that it can be useful to learn more as time goes on, but once we've heard the Four Noble Truths and a bit about meditation and a bit about opening your heart and wisdom, ethics, that's it really. So why aren't we all, maybe you are all awakened, maybe it's just me, but yes, why aren't we, assuming we aren't? The reason is that we just keep forgetting. We forget what we know. And part of the reason why we forget what we know is because we're really not sufficiently motivated to just keep remembering. So, these 4 evenings are an opportunity for us to look at our motivation, to see if we can find ways to take it deeper, and to work a bit with these 4 reflections, these 4 reminders, to help us to do that. So if we start looking at motivation, one way of looking at it, there will be a few ways to look at it over these 4 weeks, is that motivation is based on 3 aspects. If you wanted to become a teacher, say, One motivation might be that you really enjoy teaching, you find it fulfilling, that you were inspired by a teacher or teachers that you had who really kind of got you engaged with the subject, and you think, oh, that was really wonderful. Along with that, you might feel, well, it's a good job, or you know, it's a secure thing, hopefully. So there would be all the advantages of being a teacher. And then there would be all the disadvantages if you, say, you were doing a teaching course, if you didn't kind of get to the end of it, and yeah, you wouldn't get the qualification, you wouldn't get the job, you'd maybe taken on a grant, and now how are you going to pay it, or a loan, how are you going to pay it back? So there would be all sorts of disadvantages to not getting to the end of the course. And then, along with those two, there could well be a motivation that was beyond your own personal life. You might well be motivated to want to help people to learn a particular subject. You might like to inspire them with that, and you'd feel that, you know, perhaps you're teaching children, but yeah, they've got very fresh, open minds, and you can have an influence on that, and they'll take that out into the world, and that will have an influence on society. So in your own small way, you're having a beneficial influence, which is radiating out into the world. Similarly, with the Dharma, you can see your motivation in terms of inspiration, things that draw you on. So I can be inspired by people that I've met who I feel have practiced the Dharma deeply, who I feel are really open-hearted, selfless, generous with everything, with their possessions, their time, themselves. People who seem much freer than me, much more relaxed than me, much more aware than me. So that really draws me on to think, well, yes, I could keep practicing and I could become more like them. Or I could think about the qualities that develop out of Dharma practice, that unfold as our minds sort of open and we see how things are more and more clearly. Yeah, that could draw me on to want to practice. So that's one aspect of things. There's the whole what we're moving towards, or what we could move towards. And that can be a real motivating factor for us. And then there's what happens if we don't do that. Yeah? If we just let our minds drift, if we let ourselves, you know, just sort of follow our natural tendencies of our misunderstanding of how life is, which then causes us to crave and feel averse to things, to create all those knots in our lives that we, some of them quite, you know, really tough knots, some of them quite easy knots, but some really difficult, but tend to get tighter as the years go by. So there's the whole aspect of dukkha, of tension, of stress, of downright suffering that either we cause ourselves or which life brings to us, and we don't have the equanimity to deal with because we haven't worked with our minds. All that can be a motivation to practice. All that can be a motivation to think, well, do I want to end up there? Sometimes I look back at my life and think, well, if I hadn't found the Dharma, where would I have ended up? And I don't like the look of it, frankly. So that can be a motivating factor. And then, thirdly, there's the whole aspect of other people and the world, that through Dharma practice, we can firstly become more ethical, which is a great blessing. Trungpa Rinpoche once said that, you know, our first duty as human beings was to stop being a nuisance to the world. And through ethical practice, we stop being a nuisance to the world eventually. And we start to become a benefit. And not just through ethical practice, but also through meditation, we start to calm, we start to relax, our minds start to open, so we're in situations where everybody else is getting really worried and concerned and frustrated and what's going to happen, or they're all kind of gossiping about one another, and we don't have to do that. And that's a great benefit, just have somebody in a situation who is still, you know, not going up and down with the situation going up and down. Or somebody who can just be with suffering and difficulty. Someone who can be with someone who is in difficulty, in suffering. Just to be there, just to be open and receptive to them is such a blessing. And then people who actually have some understanding of how things are, of the nature of things, are a tremendous blessing to the world, rather than us all running around chasing our tails, trying to make out of a whole way of self-reference and self-concern a life that's really going to work. Well, that's not going to work. So someone who's seen to some degree through that and who has become available to life, who's become open to life, and then starts to express that in some way through love and compassion and even the Bodhisattva ideal, well, that can be a fantastic benefit for the world. You only have to think about Shakyamuni Buddha and how 2,500 years later, still, you know, he's benefiting all of us, actually. And that's just one person, you know, wandering around some dusty bit of India, you know, without any modern means of media communication or anything, somehow, just the extraordinary love and compassion and wisdom just carried on having an influence through all those other people who also worked with the Dharma. So there can be those three sources of motivation: things that we're drawn on by, our personal benefit, or things which inspire us, aspects of the Dharma which inspire us, people who inspire us, ideals which inspire us, what we want to leave behind, and then awareness of others and the world. All clear so far? Yeah? Okay. So let's go on a little bit more with motivation. You can deepen motivation by reflection. You can deepen motivation by looking into what your motivation is, by seeing where there are kind of conflicts or issues around it. And just by allowing that motivation to go deeper and deeper into your heart, deeper and deeper into your being. And that reflection, that contemplation, involves all of us. I don't mean all of us here. Well, I do mean all of us here, but I also mean all aspects of ourselves. Sometimes when people talk about reflection, they think thinking. They think that it's, you know, reflection is, you know, thinking about things, which is part of it. It can be a very useful thing to do. But reflection really includes and needs to include all of us. So as well as thinking about our motivation and thinking, well, what does really inspire me, and what wouldn't I still want to be caught up in 20 years from now? Or, how could my practice in some way, particularly connecting with other people, how could our practice really have an effect on the world? Thinking is one aspect, but then there's also just really being aware of your emotional response when you reflect, when you contemplate. You notice, you do your best to notice your emotional responses to things. So I may think about some aspect of motivation and then I feel, actually, somehow I'm feeling kind of closed down rather than opened out by that. It's like my heart isn't kind of opening and I'm not feeling more inclined to practice. It's like somehow I'm closing in. So we have to be really sensitive to our feelings with all this and really include them and explore them and hold them with kindness. But then there's also touching into our real deep heart motivation for doing things. What in our heart we really long for. What really moves us as people. Because if we touch into that, then there's a lot of power behind that. And so we'll be really firing on all cylinders with our practice. So there's thinking, there's feeling, there's that whole heart aspect. There's also imagination. You can imagine, get some sense of how your life could go, or who you could become if you really practice the Dharma for another 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. You can imagine what would happen if you didn't and you were in not very good conditions, where that might take you to. In all sorts of ways. You can use your imagination, you can use memory. It's like you're trying to just use all your experience to bring it all to bear on your motivation. And that also includes your physical body. I can pick up to some extent whether my connection with my motivation is growing stronger or there's some kind of blockage or some kind of objection to it through my body. I can just feel, I'm more tense rather than more at ease. And then there's all those gut feelings that we have, which are really important to bring in. If you have a gut feeling that what you should do with your practice is this, then that's, again, there's quite a lot of strength behind that. And then also there's intuition. There's a sense that is rather hard to ever pin down, but a deeper, from time to time, you have those kind of hunches which feel as if they're not superficial. It's like there's something trying to come through from beyond the kind of bubble of everyday me that is trying to break through that, which is coming from a deeper level. And we may not be able to explain it. We may not be able to give good reasons for why we feel like that. But it's very important to open to that intuition. Very often we have those sorts of intuition and then we argue ourselves out of them because, we can't give ourselves three good reasons why we should do it. But intuition is very important. Quite a lot of the people that I know who connected with the Dharma, in a way their first connection was intuitive. And they didn't really know why they had to, go along to a Buddhist center. They didn't really know why seeing that picture of that Buddhist teacher, they felt something really deep stirring in them. It may have taken years for them to understand that, but it was a very strong experience and a very real one. So we're aiming to bring all of ourselves to bear on our motivation and reflecting on it. And if we do that, then all of ourselves will be involved in the process. And out of that, there will be a very strong movement of our being in the direction of the Dharma, in the direction of awakening. Any questions about that or anything anybody would like to clarify? I mean, for me, resolve is pretty similar to motivation. It's maybe more for me, it has slightly more connotations of sort of commitment and having definitely decided to do it, whereas motivation is almost like the drive that goes into that definite decision. It's almost like there's a sort of motive power, and then you kind of put that into gear to definitely go somewhere. So the
motivation power.
Yeah. Anything else?
Memory. Just wondering if you could say a bit more.
More about memory. Well, I use memory to strengthen motivation, partly by remembering all the Vasantara traps that I've fallen into over the years, all those times when I didn't practice the Dharma, and all those kind of times where, you know, one or another of the kleshas, the sort of negative emotions, kind of got off the leash and away. And where it led me to, and thinking, do I really want to go there again? Oh, no, please don't make me. So there's that aspect of it. And then there's remembering times where I have felt inspired, I have felt motivated. Just feeling free to use all your life experience. Bring all that to bear. I suppose that's really what I mean by memory. Fundamentally, yeah, we've all lived so many years, and we've had all kinds of experience of things which were closer to the Dharma, and you know, some things which were a long way away from it. And yeah, in a way, we don't need the Buddha to come along and tell us. You know, we can just look at our own experience and, in a way, work it out for ourselves, and we can wait. You can waste a lot of time, you know, trying to work it out all by yourself. But also, if you don't use your life experience, then that's wasting an incredible resource that we all have. Such an idea.
Quite get what you meant in relation to motivation.
Yeah, I might feel motivated to practice the Dharma because if I really practice the Dharma, I'd be really amazing. And people would be really impressed. And it would be great, you know, because, you know, they'd see just how fantastic my meditation posture was, and, you know, I'd be so wise and so generous and so... Somehow, I don't know about you, but in my gut, that doesn't quite feel this... I don't know what it is, but there's something not quite right. That sort of... For instance, yeah. Well, there are some motivations where you don't feel free. You know, you can do things, you know, it's your duty to practice the Dharma because the world needs people practicing the Dharma, you know, like that. And somehow, although, you know, that may be true, you feel corralled, you feel kind of caught, you feel trapped, like, you know, you can't disagree. So you've got to, yes, I've got to practice the Dharma because it'd be really good for the world. But something in you doesn't feel right when you go into that. It's that kind of thing.
So what you're talking about is you're really looking at what your motivation actually is and trying to tie up on that as opposed to what your motivation is.
Yes, I mean, in a way, you try and bring the two together, all right? So there are recommended motivations coming from the Buddhist tradition. But actually, we also need to know really what's motivating us. And, the meeting of what's really motivating us with, what's recommended is very fruitful. But it has to be a completely... in a way, equal meeting and a dialogue. Because if we go too far either side, if we go, well, you know, I'm obviously right about, you know, how I'm being motivated, and all those people for the last 2,500 years, well, what do they know? That's not quite right. But also, if I feel, well, you know, what do I, you know, poor little me, who am I to question the wisdom of the Buddhist tradition or whatever. That's not right either. That's not going to get to a genuine resolution where all the issues have been looked at, they've all been thoroughly felt into, they've all been kind of worked through, and eventually, you can see this is what really motivates me and this is how it connects to, the Buddhist tradition. You can always try and do quick fixes where you don't get to that genuine resolution. Sangharakshita says, beware the premature synthesis.
It's a way to sharpen your intuition, or even to really know what's really deep in your heart, what you want or something. It's a way to focus, to discover it better, with more clarity.
I think often you need to create the space for there to be the possibility that it will arise. I mean, sometimes, you know, intuition is just, in some people it's quite strong, but in a lot of us it's not so strong, and it kind of gets crowded out. It gets, you know, because we're so busy telling ourselves the story of me all the time. These kind of intuitions, they try to come through and say, there's no space. So partly it's kind of creating some space where those kind of intuitions can arise, and being quite sort of sensitive to listen to them. And when they do arise, as I say, taking them seriously. Not necessarily, well, over time you kind of get a sense of whether this is just a more of a superficial thing, or whether it is a deeper coming from a deeper level. I think moving into a world which is not rational, you know, and sort of spending time in that world kind of encourages intuition. Even things like reading poetry and that kind of thing, it just kind of moves you into a different sort of way of functioning somehow. And moving more onto that sort of deep heart level, if we're linking that to intuition, which I think we should, then even just kind of spending time, just resting your mind in your heart center, even that starts to allow more of those deeper intuitions to come about. Yeah, it's a big subject, really. It's a few little things.